resume. And lo and behold, 1957, the people of Fort Yukon, the non-native people, decided to form a fourth-class city. But our Constitution says that if the native people of Fort Yukon will be included in these kind of things, must come with a resolution of the council or a signature of the first chief, and a vote of the tribe must be taken. It wasn't. There's no record of it. And then Alaska became a state at the same time. And 4 or 5 years down the road, without another vote of the people of Fort Yukon was made a second-class city. And about 1957, same time, the village of Fort Yukon was surveyed with Indian set-aside money called Indian Village of Fort Yukon Town Site. My chief told me that we're going to go sue. Who and what agency turned the title of the land of this in Fort Yukon over to the second-class city for them to sell as lots? And that's a letter I wrote to the council, and I said, all land sales, the lots and plots of the city must be halted at this point till we resolve this in court. Under the traditional powers of the native village of Fort Yukon, and I signed it the second chief at the request of the first chief. These are kind of problems that exist all over the state of Alaska with native town sites. They put in there, that BLM had the right to give that land to the City Inc., or did the state have the right to do that? There is no state land within the Yukon Flats. So how could the state give land to the second class city? And these kind of issue going to come up every day from now on, because we're dealing with the sovereignty power of the native people. And when I said this, I said, I was created with a constitution. The state of Alaska was created with a constitution. So when we deal together, we must deal with equal power. And somebody said, how about these corporations? Corporations are profit-making corporations without power to rule their own people. The power lies with the Native Council. My spiritual leader told me once, he said, let's get all the corporations within the state of Alaska that got potential oil land and put 50,000 drill rigs on there and drill them out. Then we'll get rid of this excess of people. Get the oil out and then let them leave so that we can go back to our own way of life. With that, Mr. Berger, thank you for inviting me to this conference.
Thank you, Mr. Solomon.
I want to thank my native brothers and all the rest of the round table. I will continue to support a subsistence way of life, and I might start with Willie. I have a little history living around Kotzebue when I was a boy. I lived subsistence lifestyle there, and also at Point Hope. I went whaling there and lived a subsistence lifestyle there. I've been up to Barter Island, subsistence lifestyle there. and most of my subsistence lifestyle was in Barrow area. And sometimes looking for a whale, it takes me 30 miles north of the land in choppy waters, and sometimes back to the east about 60 miles, and without any luck of sighting a whale at these times. So I will support, like I said, the subsistence way of lifestyle. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rexford. Yes, Mike Holloway.
Maybe if I could make a few comments from maybe medical standpoint, as Justice Berger asked me to do. I think it's been a very healthy resurgence in the 24, 25 years I've been associated with rural Alaska. My first association with Jonathan's relatives, the Gwich'in, and I had the fortune to live quite a while with a family that's very traditional, family between Venetai and Arctic Village some time in the early 60s. And I think that I should also mention I've been seen in the past few decades some other evidence of the cultural problems and that have come with the mixture of cultures, particularly in South America. I've spent some years and I've worked in both Bolivia with the Quechua and Aymara Indians and in Bolivia and also in Chile with the Mapuche as a doctor. I do think that the greatest thing I've seen in the past 20 years is the health that comes from people working to regain control over one's life, where the government and the Western culture was washing in very strongly that with the ANSCA, with its many problems, it has, I think, helped with that. And as many have pointed out, it takes a tremendous amount of time and effort, and I've been surprised pleasantly to find meetings in Savunga chaired and run quite much better than I've seen in my own homeowners association here at Anchorage. There have been major steps in the past 10 years of protecting the land and the people that have long depended on it. The Gwich'in people, for instance, I think have the longest record. In Yellowknife, in the museum, there's a caribou tibia that's shaped as a skin scraper that's felt to be dated scientifically at 24 to 27,000 years old, and it's it maintains the same shape as a caribou tibia leg bone skin scrapers that I've seen used in that area. And I just think that tremendous continuance, that somehow that's symbolic of that. I think that the subsistence laws have been upheld by the public in Alaska, and I think this needs to be further developed, and many people have talked about the ways to maintain that with the groups who don't believe in any killing and with the groups who believe perhaps that they should be the ones who have the priority. But I think that the public in Alaska has reconfirmed that subsistence is the highest priority consumptive use, and we'll need to continue trying to protect the habitat and the people, with the people being definitely involved in their own management regimes. The subsistence health-wise, I think, has not been, there's not been an appreciation by the agencies. I work with as an orthopedic surgeon with the Native Health Service, and I resigned from that position for 2 years in the late 70s to work with mainly with RuralCAP as a Village Washington liaison, realizing that I could continue to take care of broken and busted people with the high rates of alcoholism and other evidences of cultural diversion, but it would have little long-range influence. But that the influence had to come from recognizing subsistence and its central position, both nutritionally and culturally, to the physical and mental well-being of the Alaska Natives. And I have certainly felt that there is increased competition for resources, and that we don't have to draw the line necessarily right now between rural and urban, but that there are other lines that should be looked at between Alaskans and people who live outside of Alaska. What right do they have to come and take animals here? That's a legal question, I know, as well as a moral one. I do believe that foreign citizens do not have the right to take animals here, and I think that that one can be solved more easily. I think that there's not going to be a contingent room for this to be one of the remaining pools for the world's trophy hunters who have the money to fly all over the world. And I think that there are many non-consumptive recreational uses that Alaska will be used for, and I think that much of the world is going in that direction. I do think that as more regional areas come into control of their health systems, that they will realize as a priority that it's not just treating pneumonia or broken bones or the cut tendons of someone who's just slashed their wrist, but that the biggest preventive health measure that could be undertaken in the state is to preserve this traditional tie, this subsistence lifestyle with what most of you know here to far better than I do, the cultural and spiritual ties and the meaning of that. But I do feel that that needs to be recognized. In 1977 and 1978, Jonathan and others wrote the head of the Native Health Service in Alaska and asked them to recognize that importance of subsistence. And it was never done, either at an Alaska level or when we went to Washington to ask the head of the Indian Health Service there to just recognize in some way this importance. They wouldn't do it. They said it was a political question. It's not a political question. It's very far-reaching, and I hope that with the continued pressures and the continuing of having to explain yourself to outside people that that you will push for that to be recognized within the health systems, too. There was recently a so-called Arctic Circumpolar Health Conference held in Anchorage, and that question was never brought up. It was how to stop, how to cut the sugar in the dental caries or the other problems that have been identified with the junk foods and other foods that have been brought in. But the nutritionally subsistence remains the foundation of the nutritional diet, much less all of its cultural. And I hope that that'll be given a lot of emphasis as Tananaw chiefs and others have recently taken over their own health. But I do feel overall very positive. I hope that many of the problems of the divisiveness caused by ANSCA and the possibility of losing the lands that are very dear to people, the closest lands are sometimes the ones that might be greatest jeopardized after 1991 if land were taxed and the other things that happened. And I hope that this commission will continue to look very seriously and can have some effect on those people, and also the matter of enrollment, that they can somehow amend the act to take care of those Native peoples born into that culture. And I certainly will try to continue to help the environmental side, the humaniacs and others realize the importance of subsistence, but I think it will be a very continued and long-term fight. And thank you very much for the presence of the roundtable. I've really learned a lot to
Thank you, Dr. Holloway. Steve Benke.
In listening over the last 4 days, one of the things that struck me most was the wide range of political initiatives and responses that have been developed by local people to deal with specific subsistence-related problems. In some cases, this has been due to reductions in fish or wildlife populations that people are concerned about use, such as the decline in the YK nesting geese populations. In other cases, it's because of concern about protecting habitat, the International Porcupine Caribou Commission, and others that have been described. It seems to me that these are all political responses that have involved people recognizing resource problems and organizing themselves, developing political support, and getting action to protect these resources. And I think these are really valuable developments that we should consider in thinking about the future of subsistence. It seems to me that one of the things that these situations have in common is that they're in almost all these resource situations, there's a large number of different kinds of interests and rights and institutions involved in fish and wildlife questions. And with all the threats to fish and wildlife and their habitat that have been discussed, it seems absolutely critical that there has to be cooperation between different user groups and different institutions to protect those subsistence opportunities and the resources that allow them to continue. In the case studies that have been the case studies that have been described here over the last few days, it seems to me that the Native people have recognized the need for these kinds of cooperative solutions and have attempted to, at least in the cases where they've been successful, have incorporated the variety of user groups and management agencies that are necessary to make those political actions successful. The Beverly Kaminary Act Caribou Board, the International Porcupine Caribou Situation, and the Hooper Blunt Bay Plan are all examples where a whole range of institutions, the management agencies and user groups have sat down together and come up with solutions that work. Although no one's mentioned it here, I think that if you look at management of salmon, it's probably a particularly good example of this need for management regimes that incorporate all the user interests and get those interests and institutions sitting down and talking together. There's no other way to manage salmon and protect those resources. Again, I'm encouraged by the local initiatives that have been described here over the last few days. Thanks for the opportunity to learn about them.
Thank you, Steve. Well, I have a few final words of my own, but if anybody else would like to say something before we... Marie Adams, and then Austin Hammond. All right, Mr. Hammond, please go ahead, sir.
I'd like to say to our president and my granddaughter here to bring me over to be with you and to listen to everyone who's talking. There is something that we could learn from each other. When we get together like this, I think it. They used to get together every night after they eat. One of our big men used to sit in the middle and listen. What they know, they've been telling each other to correct the word what they've been using it. Why are they doing it? They try to have everything straight because the one sitting in the middle there, he's the last man there. Sometimes the other one made a mistake and he used to say, wait a minute, let's straight this one out. It might crack that way. So I think it knows all the story of our all over. In Haines, they used to walk thousands of miles by feet, no car, no plane. They used to walk all the way to Dawson. They used to walk over to Yukon River. On a boat, they used to go down to San Francisco. That's why they know a lot of stories of our people. My great-grandfather, two of them, tell me the stories. But what I am, I just try to hold it down, like what I am now, listen to you talking. How everything goes, they used to tell me, grandson, you're going to sit among the people someday, one day talking. Listen to them. Sometimes you're going to hear they talking rough, but listen, don't answer it. When you go home, think about it. Maybe the word they use and it hurts you, but don't say nothing till you find out what is in there. Then you answered. This is the last day we hear from the first time I'm talking again to tell you how I think it knows. Our people, about what we're talking about subsisting, they know it, everything. If I keep mention everything what they know, I don't think any of our white brothers could live underwater for 1 year. Maybe you could have built something like here, but our people is with the fish. That's the reason why they know it, how the fish goes. That young man, when he come back home, they took him back home. That fish bring them back where they belong to. That's when they start telling what did he find out. Right now, we're here talking about our subsistence to learn from each other what is going to be right for us. Even the animals, we live with a brown bear. One of our men married with a brown bear. And a woman married with a brown bear. So we know it. Right now on, mention their names, the brown bear. They listen to us. And I think it way we call Kukiktagik, big ears. They listen. We know how to handle everything, what my grandfather do. The time he was a hunter. One thing he used to tell me, if you hunting brown bear, where you kill it, don't skin it where it falls. Put something underneath. They used to use a hemlock. They chop some limbs out and put it on the side and roll it on it again and put some on the other side. That's when they start skinning. And the way they're going to put the meat, they put some more branches and they put it there. The spirit of the brown bear stand by you where you're working on it. but the spirit's going to go back home. They're going to ask, how did they treat you? Well, they fix a bed for me. Then they work on me. That's when the one sitting around, they tell him, you go by him. If we don't take care of right, the spirit, when it goes back, he's going to say, you don't take care of me. And then they said, don't go by them. Everything what we're talking about, it, we don't take care of it. I think it knows the story, how to handle. Even the fish, how we do. As soon as we catch the fish, we don't work on it. We have to leave it underwater. The place we're all going to put, we clean them up. Then put it up. All these stories, what they told me, I am going right on the trail where they put it with my grandfather. A lot of times I just could see him. When I start talking, what he teach me. I didn't go to school, but I went to school with my Tlingits. I learned it. Right now I was listening a lot of what we're talking about. It is hard for us now. Why? And I could go way back again. By the time our white people came to us, we don't have nobody around us. The story came from Turubi. What had happened with our people with that big canoe turned over. What they use like a bag, it's a halibut. They took all the meat out, just the skin. And they put all the fur right in there. In Turubi, when the tide is going down, they try to go up on top. The wind is beginning to blow right toward the shore. The waves is the biggest this house here. It's going right under. They got no way to save themselves. But that three boat turned over. This is how that sea bag, we call it, that halibut skin, all that fur in it, it drift out. The Russian has to find it. All this story that I know, but I'm holding it down. When they told us, your people just moved here in Alaska, our white brothers. But if I talk about this, maybe they will get hurt. But I'm trying to hold it back much as I can. But now, in Chilkoot, that I show you the blanket, some of you don't understand what I'm saying about it. This blanket, what I brought it out in front of you, we got it from Metlakatla. That's where it started from. Through our visiting, like I was talking about it, we go down to down south of Frisco, Prince Rupert, all over. So that's where they are. So they're in love with the woman, and they married from our side. So this is what they pay with it. They give it to us. That's all I was talking about it. What Tlingit said, it's going to be yours. Metlakatla didn't take it back from us to work on it. They know how to do it. They gave it to us, so we took it up to Chilkat. So we call that Chilkat blanket. I try to tell a lot of our young people, totem pole that we see, to pay to merit with ours, young girl, they give us the totem pole. And we learn it from them. That's how come we're using yellow cedar. And this blanket, we're using red cedar bark. On outside, we use the wool of a mountain goat, the ones inside. My granddaughter sitting here, his grandma, she's the last one alive. She's doing it, teaching everybody. And she knows very well how to work on it. So all this, what we learn, the story that we're talking about, but I'm listening to you. But I'm glad to be with you. And I want to be with you as long as I live. To learn something, maybe you learn a little bit from me. I'm going to learn quite a bit from you. Because I didn't go to school. You see it, I don't have no paper in front of me. But still I'm telling you the story. How our Tlingit knows the story. Just like that seabag I was talking about, it full with the skin. And I was full from bottom of my feet up to my head with the story. I tried to teach my grandchildren all the story, what I know. Because my great-grandfather told me, grandson, don't die with you, the story we're telling you. Tell your son, your daughters, and your grandchildren, and your great-grandchildren, whoever wants to learn it, tell them, so it won't die. So this is what I'm doing in Chilkat. I'm proud of Dick Fold, they were sitting here with me and his wife. We started our family tree. This is from there it started growing, what I'm doing. I used to cover it, like what my grandfather tell me. Don't try to put yourself up on top of anyone. Stay low. So I was way down. I never said not a word, what I know. But now, Dick Fold and his wife, they open it up. And they, from there on, are beginning to work. The reason why I'm not afraid to do this, what I'm doing now, the time I got sick, I'm really almost died. If it wasn't for Julie Folder, she saved me. She found me when I was laying in bed at home. Addison disease, they call it. I never ate 9 days. And they took me to the doctor, and she took me down to Juno. 2 weeks I didn't find it. She never gave up. After they find out what is it, they have to send for that pills down to Seattle. That's what I'm using. If I skip, I get sick. I gotta keep taking it. Through her, right now, I'm sitting here among you. That time I was in hospital, I was praying to my Heavenly Father to give me my life back so I could tell the story with my grandchildren, with my friends. That time when they find out what's wrong with me, then I beginning to dream. I was asking God that time, if I'm doing something wrong, send in my dream. It is came. Like this big building, I was sitting at the corner. They put me there. So the man came. What you doing here? Well, they told me to sit here. But the table is in the middle. He told me, come out. We'll see what is it. He don't have nothing. Not a paper. Just his hand. He's just like he was praying. Then he showed me, see, there's nothing against you. It is funny thing happened. 3 times when I wake up, I have to come back to that dream again. That first one, when I was sitting by the table, after they told me nothing against me, and I told my wife when I wake up. When I fall asleep again, I dream again. They told me that's a big table. Now you go on that one. Sit there. I'll be in the middle. And there's a lot of people like here sitting around the building on the side. So he started working on it. And he came to me. There's nothing against you. All what you got on this table is belongs to you. And I have to get up and pass everything who was sitting there. I didn't take any. God was answering my prayer. He's showing it to me. The last one, when I fall asleep again, they told me, now this time you got up on the platform. We're going to give you the box to go with it. So I went up there. They bring the box, square box and high. This one you're going to go with it. You look for the manager and the coach. You're going to give it to them. And I don't know where I'm going to go with it. I just went out like what they tell me. The people outside, I was walking through. That time, I asked the man and they're walking. You know where's the coach and the manager? They're way over there. So I keep walking. Keep asking. Finally, they told me, manager over there and the coach. So I went by them, give it to him. When I gave it to them, they opened it. And they took what they write in there. And after they read it, they turn around. And they took that. That's a catch it love. All gold, shiny. And that's when they told me, in a place where we're going, your name's going to be all over the world. That's why I said, I'm not afraid what I'm doing. God has to tell me what to do. I'm proud of it, like what I said, what Julie did for me. So this is what opened my way, and here I am with you. And I hope if you come down to Haines and show you what I got in Haines. And I'm proud to be here with you. I'm thankful for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Hammond. Marie Adams?
Yes, after voicing my frustrations, it's always frustrating in trying to go forward from where you are, because it's a continuing battle. I wanted to take, before not saying anymore, take this opportunity to thank Justice Bircher and the ICC for granting us an opportunity throughout the state of Alaska to voice out our frustrations that have been building up over the years. And I feel very good about having this kind of discussion. And before 1991, and in dealing with the state or the federal government on other issues, I think, you know, this kind of thing can be very useful. I've learned a lot from our Canadian brothers and sisters, and also from people who have worked with them and from the state. From what I mean by the provinces and the government, and also I was real glad to see the state people participating. And I think, I believe there are some people from the U.S. government, I'm not sure. But I think these kinds of things can be very useful, and I would hope to see them continue before coming to some sort of solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Marie.
Kay Wallace wanted to say something, if she can take.
Please.
Thank you for letting me talk to you, even though I'm not on the panel. I just wanted to tell you about a village that's representative of what's happening now and what will happen, what will represent the future also. This village that I just came from told me that they got 4 moose this year. 4 moose. 4 cultural food, 4 traditional food, 4 religious food. This community is about 250, and they got 4 moose. I was really sad about that. That's enough for the elders. That's not enough for them to sustain through the winter. I felt it was morally wrong, and I believe that. The moose was there. This community is built near a major highway called the Hall Road. And over the Hall Road came the people from a larger community and took the moose. And so there was not their traditional food there. This is based on economics. Because the people came with their toys to hunt for food that they didn't necessarily need, because there was that food there in the stores. But for this community, there is no store. There is no frozen food, and what they have to bring in, they have to fly in. What I call their toys is what we have to use to keep body and soul alive. 3-wheelers, other machines. But what was happening in the cities was that these toys didn't have to keep them alive. And in the village, we have to use them to bring our wood and to bring our water. And when we had the subsistence vote in Alaska, Alaskans voted for it. But our state, our administration, is not necessarily listening to that. And there are not quite a few non-natives who are supporting this lifestyle, this way of life. But I'm sorry to say that our state administrators don't always look at it that way. So we have this village and other villages that are being impacted by development. No one went to that community and said, what will happen when this Hall Road goes in by your community? What will happen when this bridge is built? What do you feel about it? How do you think? And again, that is happening all over the state. There is not local input. And I think that this is having negative impact upon us as Alaskans. And again, I'd just like to say that I believe that not getting the food is morally wrong, and people are morally responsible. And that to have local input, there must be that respect there shown by the people that represent us and carry out what the Alaskans want. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well,